Boba Fett used the blaster pistol in his hand to point toward Kudam Mobat. If there was something you wanted done by me, then that's who you should have come to, instead of bringing in a go-between like this.
Perhaps you're right. She gave a judicious nod. Perhaps I underestimated you, Bounty Hunter. I'll remember that for our future business dealing.
Assuming you have a future.
The blaster pistol swung back toward the Feline.
I have decided about that. If I wasn't in the loop on this little scheme of yours, there must have been a reason. The same reason that you had your ship's laser cannons fire on Slave One as soon as I came out of hyperspace. You didn't want me to still be alive after all your plotting and scheming was finished.
Fett raised the blaster higher, sighting down the length of its barrel towards Shizor.
Why is that?
Do you want the truth?
You're a dangerous individual, Bounty Hunter,
Shizor shrugged.
You have a habit of coming out on top, no matter what kind of situation you find yourself in. That can be very inconvenient for Black Sun. We're engaged in our own war with the Empire, regardless of whether that fool Palpatine knows who's on his side and who isn't.
Cephaline's voice hardened.
But there can only be one winner at this game, however many players are sitting at the board.
And you thought it would be better for you, and for Black Sun, if there was one less.
Precisely, said Shizor. And you can believe this, if nothing else that I tell you. If I had continued to want you dead, now that you've accomplished the job I have for you, the real one, that of smashing the Bounty Hunters Guild, then all your vaunted survival skills would done you no good at all. Crashing into the web here was a clever move, but it was the only one left to you. How much time do you think it would have bought you if I hadn't changed my mind about the desirability of your death?
The corners of Shizor's mouth curled into a sneer.
The life of some scheming assembler and his assortment of scuttling little subnodes wouldn't have stopped me from turning my laser cannons on this web and blowing it into tattered shreds drifting in space. What?
Shizor's words brought a stark reaction from Kudam Mobat.
Shizor turned his head to give the assembler a coldly merciless gaze. Your value to me has long been marginal, Kudam Mobat. And now, it's zero.
A hissing shriek sounded from the assembler. Its forelimbs flailed in rage.
You think so, do you, Shizor?
Rage was enough to bring the larger compound eyes into focus.
After all I've done for you.
Kudam Mobat's head shook back and forth.
And all I continue to do for you and Black Sun.
One claw tip trembled as it pointed at Shizor.
You survive only as long as your affairs remain secret.
With the same claw, the assembler pointed at itself.
I am the one who keeps those secrets for you. How will you keep Palpatine in the dark without me to do your dirty work for you?
Simple enough, replied Shizor evenly. I have another business associate who will take your place. One who has all your contacts, all your connections. One who knows your business better than you do.
Impossible!
All of Kudam Mobat's spidery limbs thrashed the stale air in the chamber. One of Precisor's hands reached out, languid and graceful, yet possessed of untrembling power. He held his open palm upward, and the sub-node balance sheet scuttled onto it. The miniature version of its parent turned around in the small space and set its multi-lensed gaze upon Kudam Mobat.
You old fool.
The subnode's words were no longer spoken in the tone both efficient and obsequious that it had always used before. Now its voice was both deeper and touched with a newly won authority. To Boba Fett's eyes, the subnode even appeared slightly larger than before, as though it were already literally expanding into its new role in life. Perched on Shizor's hand, balance sheet raised its own forelimbs in an expansive gesture.
Things'll be very different now,
said Balanchine. Its brightly glittering eyes glanced over at Boba Fett.
For many of us, and yet in certain ways, things will remain exactly the same. There will be a member of our unique species, an arachnoid assembler, at the center of a vast, invisible web spanning the galaxy, arranging delicate matters, pulling strings, putting one creature in contact with another. All those delicate items of business that one of our breed is capable of doing so well. But there can only be one web like that, and only one assembler listening to and making those little tugs upon its strands. And that assembler's name will no longer be Kuda Mubat. You've had a long time at the center, time in which you've grown old and fat and stupid. But that time is done now.
Like a broken thing, Kuda Mubat shrank back down into its nest.
I had no idea.
The spray limbs folded around its abdomen as though trying to preserve the fading warmth of life.
I trusted you. I needed you. That was your mistake,
said Balanchine coldly.
And the last one.
Prince Shizor extended his hand toward the chamber's curved wall. Balanchine scuttled from his palm and onto the densely tangled structural fibers. I'm afraid, said Shizor, that the business relationship between us is over now, Kuda Mubat. The assembler's voice wavered with fear.
What are you going to do?
You'll find out soon enough.
Nobody's finding out anything, said Boba Fett.
He listened to the exchange between the Feline Prince and the Arachnoid Assembler with mounting impatience. The blaster pistol rose in his hand once more, reasserting its hold on the other's attention.
That is, he continued, until my business is taken care of.
Of course, Shizor nod of acknowledgement. But you see, Bounty Hunter, this is your business. My new associate, Balanchine, was the one who convinced me that you should be allowed to go on living, and that was after I had already decided that you should be killed. An indulgent, though still cruel, smile showed on Shizor's face. You're a fortunate creature. Many in Black Sun will testify that it's a rare occasion when I change my mind.
Then why did you?
From its perch on the chamber wall, Balanchine answered.
My analysis was that you're worth more to us alive than dead, Boba Fett. With the old Bounty Hunters Guild now dismantled, there's no one in your chosen profession with your resources and skills. Black Sun, as well as the other clients whose accounts I've inherited, will still have need of an effective bounty hunter such as yourself. The consideration that had prompted Prince Shizor's previous decision to kill you was based upon seeing the need to reduce the number of creatures who were aware that he and Black Sun had been behind the anti-guild operation from the beginning.
The former sub-node spoke as matter-of-factly as if it had been adding up a long column of numbers in its head.
But as I pointed out to Shizor, getting rid of Kuda Mubat accomplishes the same thing and more. Not only do we eliminate the weakest link in the chain, after all, an assembler buys and sells information all the time, but we also leave a more valuable business associate alive, one who would owe us a favor as well.
Boba Fett shook his head.
If you're expecting gratitude, then I'm in short supply. And you're the ones who owe me. Remember? For him.
He pointed with the blaster pistol toward Besant.
Nobody leaves here, dead or alive, until the bounty gets paid out.
He turned his visor-shielded gaze and the blaster toward Prince Shizor.
So, how about it?
Shizor gave a slight nod, then turned and gestured with one hand toward Balanchine. Transfer the funds being held in escrow on Coruscant to the main operating and receipt account of the bounty hunter Boba Fett. Through his own comlink mounted inside his helmet, Boba Fett accessed the remote communications functions aboard Slave One. It took only a few seconds to verify the proper sum had been in the now-empty escrow account, and that a transfer had gone through into his own account. The bounty for Tahin Versant was his now.
Fine, said Boba Fett. Now you two can sort out your business affairs any way you want. They don't concern me.
He turned away and strode toward the chamber's exit. The web started to die before he even reached Slave One. A shudder ran through the walls around Boba Fett. As the tangled floor buckled beneath his feet, he fought his way toward his ship. He knew that in the distance behind him, the assembler Kudar Mubat was facing the Black Sun cleanup crew. When they were done, there would no longer be a Kudar Mubat, or the web that once formed the assembler's private little world. It wasn't necessary to fire the ship's rockets to get away from the web. As Boba Fett watched, the last of the heavy structural fibers broke free from each other, the interwoven fabric unraveling into loose strands. Where Kudar Mubat's abode and place of business had blotted out the stars behind, the light-specked black of empty space now stood. All his remaining concerns for the moment were technical ones. Boba Fett turned toward the cockpit's navicomputer. What he needed now was an advanced technology shipyard, one without too many entanglements with either the Empire or the Rebel Alliance, or scruples about working for payments made under the table, as it were. Some of the weapons and tracking modules aboard Slave One were technically restricted. Before he could finish his calculations, a voice came over the comm unit.
It was a pleasure doing business with you.
The voice of the distant balance sheet was not quite as obsequiously formal as its parent Kudar Mubat's had been.
We'll do it again.
The control panel's proximity monitors registered the presence of another ship in the sector. Hitting the viewport's long-range mag function brought up a clear image of a standard bulk freighter. Its registration was clear, but showed former ownership by one of Shizor's and Black Sun's holding companies. Boba Fett thumbed his own comm unit's transmit button.
I thought you were going independent, balance sheet.
I am. This freighter, however humble, is mine alone. But then my needs are not elaborate, and Prince Shizor did give me a good deal on it. Virtually free.
Nothing's free with him. You'll pay for it eventually.
I suspect you're correct in that.
Balance sheet did not sound overly concerned.
But in the meantime, it gives me a base of operations. It is, however, little more than large empty space with a set of thruster engines attached to an autonomic navigational system. I'll have to spend a considerable amount to equip it the way I wish.
Save up your credits, then.
Boba Fett looked down to a list of shipyard possibilities on the computer readout.
That kind of work doesn't come cheap.
Oh, I've got the credits already.
Balance sheet's voice turned pitying.
You really should have checked your own accounts after seeing that the transfer had been made. If you had, you would have seen that you wound up with half the bounty posted for Besant. The way I see it, you owed me at least that much. If it hadn't been for me, Prince Caesar would have gone ahead and eliminated you. So let's just call this another little business deal.
Let's call it theft.
Boba Fett rasped out the word.
I'm the wrong creature to steal from.
Get serious, Fett.
The assembler's mocking words slid out of the comm unit speaker.
As slow as this freighter might be, it's still faster than you at the moment.
I'll catch up with you sooner or later, promised Boba Fett.
Until the next time,
said Balance Sheet.
I'll be waiting, Bounty Hunter.
The comm unit connection with the freighter broke off and silence filled Slave One's cockpit.
Boba Fett gazed out at empty space.
His thoughts dark and brooding. Then he turned again to the calculations of the slow journey ahead of him. Now, during the events of Star Wars: Return of the Jedi. The story ended. At least for now, thought Neela. She had been sitting for a long time with her back against the cold durasteel bulkhead of the Houndstooth cargo hold, sitting and listening as the other bounty hunter, Dengar, had finished his account of Boba Fett's past and all that had come out of the scheme to destroy the old bounty hunter's guild. That's it, huh? Neela said. Then, thinking glumly, I still don't know who I am. All the mysteries, all the questions that repeated over and over inside her skull were still infuriatingly present. Sorry it didn't do the trick for you, Dengar's voice broke into her thoughts. But if you didn't know it before, at least you do now. Fett's not anybody to fool around with, not unless you don't care whether you live or die.
I don't have that choice, replied Neela. Believe me, if I could have avoided meeting Boba Fett, I would have.
For yourself. Dengar had made up a little pallet for himself near the bulkhead where he had sat while recounting the story about Boba Fett's past.
Now, for me, it's a real honor hooking up with him and all, being as I'm in the bounty hunter business myself, not at the same level as him, though.
Hands clasped behind his head, Dengar lay down.
So, for him to ask me to come along as his partner...
Dengar didn't have to explain anything more than that.
For you,
thought Neela. Back on Tatooine, in their hiding place below the parched surface of the Dune Sea, Dengar had told her about his hopes of actually quitting the dangerous bounty hunter trade and settling down with his beloved Manaru. The couple had been betrothed for some time, but had put off their marriage until Dengar had found some way of getting out from under the enormous weight of debt he carried. Financially, it had been all downhill for him since he quit at Manaru's gentle prodding, his previous specialty as a Grade One Imperial assassin. He was a different person now, and a better one. Working for the Empire ate away one's spirit, sometimes fatally so, and he had Manaru to thank for saving him from that fate. But it still left the mountain of debt that had accumulated so swiftly upon his back. Creatures who owed credits in this galaxy and who didn't pay up also had a good chance of winding up dead. Even with Jabba the Hutt dead, there were plenty of other hard lenders who operated that way. A partnership with the notorious Boba Fett was the best and maybe only opportunity Dengar had for clearing his account. If, Neela figured, he didn't get killed along the way. She lay down again at the bounty hunter on the makeshift pallet. Dengar was already asleep, or doing a good imitation of it.
I've got to get out of here, thought Neela desperately.
She didn't know if her own words meant the cargo hold, this ship, or the dark mystery that her life had become. It didn't matter. There was only one exit before her. The ladder that led to the ship's cockpit area. Neela put her boot on the lowest rung and started climbing. Boba Fett was at the cockpit's panel making precise adjustments to the controls. Neela raised her eyes to the viewport in front of the control panel just as they dropped out of hyperspace. A vista of stars filled the viewport. Neela looked across the bright, cold star field, and she saw the past. Not her own, but Boba Fett's.
It's just like the story, Neela marveled. The story Dengar told.
In the vacuum outside the Houndstooth, Kudar Mobat and his flock of created subnodes gently drifted, bumping soundlessly against the transparasteel of the cockpit's forward viewport.
They've been dead a long time, Neela said.
Of course. Boba Fett raised his own gaze from the instrument gauges and looked out at the same vista as Neela did. The last time I was in this sector, these entities had just been killed. He turned and looked over his shoulder at Neela. But you know all about that, don't you?
A sudden realization hit her. You were listening in, weren't you? Over the ship's internal communication system. All the while Dengar was telling me about what happened to you in the past.
Boba Fett gave a single dismissive shake of his head. I hardly needed to, since Dengar was acting on my instructions.
You told him to...
It's convenient for me to have you brought up to speed on a few matters of common interest.
Her surprise faded quickly. He's been ahead of me before,
thought Neela.
He probably will be again.
So, this is the location, huh? Where Prince Shizor tried to eliminate you, then changed his mind and took out that arachnoid assembler instead?
Precisely. Boba Fett pointed toward the viewport. As you can see, everything Dengar told you about the incident was the truth. Shizor's cleanup crew didn't leave much of Kudar Mubat's web.
Why did you bring us here? The spirit-chilling uncanniness of the sight of dead creatures tethered together by strands of neural tissue touched a thread of anger inside Neela.
Just to reminisce?
There's very little I do, replied Boba Fett calmly. That is, without purpose. I came here for a reason, and you were brought here for the same reason. Go tell Dengar to come up here. We have a lot to talk about.
Boba Fett turned around in the pilot's chair to face Dengar and Neela.
Let's get right to business. When I say that there is a considerable amount of time pressure upon our actions here, you should believe it.
You mean what's going on with the Empire and the Rebels? Dengar shrugged.
I don't see what the worry is. The big battle they've got shaping up between them, that's way out by Endor. I don't see how it could affect what we're doing here. If anything, their problems should make it easier for us to take care of whatever you brought us here for. We can do what we want, and neither the Empire nor the Rebels will be any the wiser. That kind of simplistic analysis is why you're the one taking orders and not one giving them.
Boba Fett laid his gloved hands flat on the arms of the pilot's chair.
The battle that's likely to take place near Endor might be over, once it's begun, in less than a few minutes. And it will have a decisive impact on the fate of the ongoing struggle between the Empire and the Rebel Alliance. And it does matter which side wins to creatures like us. Palpatine wishes to make absolute his control over the galaxy and everything in it. Our own ambitions and what we do to pursue them might no longer be possible if Palpatine were to achieve all that he desires.
And what about mine? Neela spoke up. What happens to me and what I want?
The past and the world that was stolen from you will be lost forever if Palpatine wins this struggle with the Rebel Alliance.
And if the Rebels win?
There's no way they can.
Boba Fett gave a flat, hard shake of his head.
But if the impossible should happen, then that would be bad for our business as well. The Rebels' pretenses to a higher morality would prevent them from paying the established rates for our services. And they would also, at the same time, seek to exterminate those criminal operations which have been some of my best customers. Let's face it, the best outcome, as far as bounty hunters are concerned, would be for this battle near Endor to wind up being a draw somehow.
Neela didn't seem concerned by the dismal long-term prospects that Boba Fett had described.
So, what do you propose doing in the meantime? Why did you bring us here?
My plans are my own, said Boba Fett. But some of them concern you, and it's now become convenient for you to have some of your many questions answered. You wanted the past, your past. Then so it shall be.
He gestured with one hand toward the viewport behind him. Neela scowled disgustedly at the viewport. Outside, the pallid strands of neural tissue and their tethered spider-like corpses continued to drag their shapes past the transparisteel.
Is this some kind of joke?
Neela glared angrily at Fett.
I don't see anything that...
Boba Fett interrupted her.
You don't see because you don't understand. Not yet, at any rate. But if you listen to me, you will. This part of the story didn't begin here. And it happened a little while before the arachnoid assembler Kudar Mubat met his demise. I had concluded business in one of the nearby systems, and I was returned toward the center of the galaxy. One of the functions I had programmed into Slave One's computers was a complete database of the ships of all other bounty hunters. I sometimes find it worthwhile to keep an eye on what other bounty hunters are up to. And if Slave One's ID scanners home in on a bounty hunter ship in a navigational sector that should otherwise be empty of such activity, then I find that very interesting indeed. It's even more interesting when the onboard computers read out the ID code of a ship belonging to a bounty hunter known for his unsavory business practices. On that day, the ID code identified the ship as one known most often as the Venicectrix. The owner of the Venicectrix was a certain Reed Upton. Pausing a moment, Boba Fett looked over at Dengar. Perhaps you're familiar with the name. It took a moment, but the name finally hooked up with a memory synapse inside Dengar's head. Reed Upton. He's the only one who ever got booted out of the Bounty Hunters Guild. I didn't think he was still active, even out in the border. I guess he's not, said Neela dryly. Pay attention, why don't you? He's obviously being discussed in the past tense, for a reason. True, Boba Fett nodded. When I came across the Venicectrix in open space, it was simply drifting. The reasonable assumption was that the pilot was either dead or had abandoned his ship. To determine which was the case, I forced entry through the airlock. Dupton didn't make a good-looking corpse. Once a competitor of mine is dead, I lose interest in them. But the two uncompleted jobs that Dupton had been working on were interesting enough for me to take over. The first one was in the form of a deactivated cargo droid. Someone had cleverly transformed it into an autonomic spy device, with not only built-in vid cameras and sound recording equipment, but an olfactory detect and sample circuit as well. This converted cargo droid was capable of detecting evidence of something, or someone, that would otherwise have remained hidden and undiscovered, if visual and auditory clues were all that had been processed, which is what it, in fact, had done. I found that out when I removed the data record from inside the droid and analyzed it. The truth came out concerning a certain individual having been at a certain place and at a certain important time, even though he had tried to conceal his presence from anyone else who might have been watching and listening.
What place?
Neela's tone was as demanding and impatient as before.
What time?
Back on Tatooine. On a moisture farm in the Dune Sea, some distance away from the Mos Eisley spaceport. A moisture farm owned by one Owen Lars, nobody important, and operated by him and his wife Beru, assisted by a young nephew of theirs, who just happened to be someone very important.
Luke Skywalker, said Dengar. That's who you're talking about, isn't it?
So, what's the big mystery about that? Darth Vader ordered the stormtrooper raid on the moisture farm. A lot of creatures in the galaxy know about that by now.
Dengar shrugged.
Anybody who's had any contact at all with the Rebel Alliance has heard most of the story.
The mystery, said Boba Fett quietly,
has to do with what I found in the deactivated cargo droid aboard Reed Upton's ship. The details, when I played back the files, were consistent with the known accounts of the raid and aftermath. There were only Imperial stormtroopers to be observed, going about their lethal business. But in the analysis of the spy device's olfactory data were the unmistakable pheromones of a male of the feline species. The specific pheromone traces could only have come from a member of the feline nobility. There's a genetic marker that is unique to that bloodline.
A feline nobleman?
Dengar's brow creased as he puzzled over the information.
But they're all dead now.
There was one still alive, said Boba Fett, at the time of the stormtrooper raid on Tatooine. Before that, the feline nobility had been virtually wiped out by a genetic warfare experiment, one that was initiated by Lord Vader. Of that family grouping, the only surviving member was Prince Shizor, who was then the head of the Black Sun organization.
I don't get it.
Dengar felt even more confused than before.
You're saying that Prince Shizor was part of the raid that killed Luke Skywalker's aunt and uncle?
Not at all.
Boba Fett put his gloved hands flat on the arms of the pilot's chair again.
The spy device contained evidence of Prince Shizor being present at the raid, but the evidence might not have been genuine. There's several reasons for being suspicious about the evidence. One is that Lord Vader and Prince Shizor were mortal enemies.
Therefore, the best analysis would be that the evidence linking Shizor to the raid had been created by some third party, possibly as a way of drawing unwanted attention toward Prince Shizor. That possibility reinforced by Reed Dupton's own history. He had been involved on several occasions with disinformation campaigns. But whatever the intent had been in trying to link Shizor with the Stormtrooper raid, it was hardly worth following through on it once Shizor had been killed. The only thing left from the plot was the fabricated evidence that was in my possession once I came across Dupton's ship drifting in space.
For which, I'm sure, you'd find some good use.
Unfolding an arm, Neela held up two fingers.
But you said there was something else you found on that ship. What was the other item?
Perhaps this one will compel more of your attention.
Boba Fett shrugged.
In the cargo hold cages of the Venusectrix, I found a young female human. She was still unconscious, the after effect of a rather thorough memory wipe that she had received.
Dengar heard a sudden gasp come from Neela.
Good, said Boba Fett. I see that I have managed to pique your interest. I could only assume that a memory wiped femaleman had been in Dupton's possession as part of his various business enterprises. It was just a matter of stowing you someplace where you'd be out of danger while I determined the best way of profiting from your situation.
So you put her in Jabba the Hutt's palace? The notion astonished Dengar. That hellhole? She could have gotten thrown to Jabba's pet rancor.
The dangers of Jabba's palace were well known to me, said Boba Fett. While substantial, they were nevertheless limited and predictable, and I would be on hand to circumvent them.
So you could keep an eye on me, said Neela. Her gaze narrowed. But what you were really hoping for was that someone in that crowd of thugs and criminals in Jabba's court would recognize me for who I really was. And that would be how to find out how to turn a profit from me.
That possibility had occurred to me. Also, there was a former business associate of Reed Dupton at Jabba's palace. The two of them had been working together until just before Dupton's death. What he told me was his former business associate, Reed Dupton, had accepted two new jobs just before they had had their falling out with each other, and that one client would be paying for both jobs. But Dupton hadn't told him who the client was. The last two jobs that Reed Dupton had taken on were obviously the ones I found aboard his ship. Whoever the person was who had hired him to do something with the fabricated evidence about Prince Shizor, that person must also have been the one that had arranged for the abduction memory wipe of Neela. But what my contact in the palace told me was that the person who paid for those jobs hadn't hired Reed Dupton directly. He had used an intermediary, a go-between.
A go-between? Suddenly Dengar understood. It must have been Kuda Mubat. The Assembler was the only creature who would have arranged that kind of job for Reed Dupton. But it's dead, Neela said flatly. Kuda Mubat is dead, remember? You were here when it happened. She shook her head in disgust. You brought us all the way out here for nothing. The dead can't tell us any secrets.
That's where you're wrong.
Boba Fett turned in the pilot's chair and pointed to the viewport behind him.
Look. In the scan of space visible outside the ship, a spider-like corpse, larger than all the others, drifted. Jointed legs tucked up beneath what was left of its globular abdomen. The hollow, blind eyes of Kudar Mubat gazed back at the visitors to the cold vacuum of its tomb.
We only need to bring the dead back to life.
Boba Fett spoke with calm assurance, just as though nothing would be easier.
And then, listen.
Kodira Kuvolt tried to keep her cloak from touching the damp walls of the underground watering hole. She had known there were such places on the world of Kuat, but she had never been in one before. A candle's stubs, inadequate light flickered, merging her shadow and Fanal's with the darkness in which the other figure sat hunched and brooding over squat mugs of intoxicants.
You got what you wanted.
The traitor Fanal's smile was both unpleasant and knowing in the dim, smoky light of the establishment.
That's what it's all about, isn't it?
I've got some of what I wanted. Kodir leaned forward so that Fanal would be able to make out her hushed words. There's always more. Fanal was a little drunk. He had obviously been waiting for her to show up for some time.
Fred, I can't help you much with the rest.
I'm not exactly in an influential position these days, am I?
I sort of spent all that on the last part of your plans.
Yes, Kodir nodded. You're quite an actor. You did a very good job for me. I appreciate that.
Good,
said Fanal thickly. He regarded her from heavy-lidded eyes.
Because I need you to show that appreciation. I'm a little short on credits these days. What with having lost my job and all. And since you've got that job now,
just what you wanted, huh?
Then I think it's only fair if you pay a little more than what you did up front. Like, on a continuing basis. So I wouldn't be tempted into talking to anybody about our little performance, shall we say. It'd be a shame to spoil the show while it's still going on.
You're right. It would be. Kodir reached across the table and laid her hand on top of his. But, you know, there's more than one way for me to show my appreciation. In his present state, it took Fanal a few seconds to understand what she meant. Then his smile grew wider and uglier.
Fine,
he said.
But that'll have to be in addition to the credits.
She didn't say anything in reply, but leaned farther across the table, bringing her face closer to his. Just before their lips met, her other hand emerged from inside the cloak with something bright and glittering in her grip. Fanal's eyes went round with shock as he felt the object move across his throat.
No, it instead,
Kodir said softly. She dropped the vibro blade onto the table next to where Fanal had collapsed face down in a widening pool of his own blood. Drawing her cloak's hood forward, Kodir turned and looked back across Watering Hole's dim space. None of its clientele appeared to have noticed that anything at all had happened. She slid a few coins onto the table's corner, then got up and walked unhurriedly toward the steps leading back up to the surface level. A different woman entered a pleasure den far from the planet of Kuat, but she too wrapped herself in a hooded cloak to prevent anyone from prying into her affairs.
Business is a little slow for me right now,
said the gambler named Dromus Mada. The laughter of the galaxy's rich and foolish denizens sounded from all sides of the establishment. Placing his hands together across his expansive belly, he leaned back in his chair.
So, I can't cover any big bets at the moment. None of the Alliance versus the Empire stuff.
That's fine.
The woman kept her voice low.
I want to place a different kind of wager. On the bounty hunter.
Bounty hunters, huh? Who do you want to bet on?
The woman told the gambler.
You've got to be joking.
He looked at her in amazement.
Him?
Will you cover the bet?
I'll cover it, all right. And I'll give you great odds, too, because, frankly, he's not going to make it. I know what kind of trouble he's in. It doesn't get any worse.
Just be ready to pay up when the time comes.
The woman strode toward the establishment's ornately framed exit, the edge of the cloak trailing across the gold-speckled floor.
Near the planet Kuat, other conversations were taking place. Believe me, said the leader of the scavenger squadron, I don't like being here either. I'd rather be out near Sullust right now, getting ready for the real battle.
Kuat of Kuat turned from his lab bench and looked over his shoulder at the figure standing, flight helmet in the crook of one arm, in the middle of his own private quarters. To one side of the space, a high arching bank of transparasteel panes revealed stars and the immense, intricate shapes of Kuat Drive Yard's construction docks.
Then you should feel free to leave,
Kuat of Kuat said mildly. The presence of your squadron here is entirely unnecessary.
The Rebel Alliance feels otherwise. An impressive scar ran in an almost perfect diagonal across Commander Gennad Rojden's face, the result of surviving a previous skirmish with Imperial fighters. And I have my orders directly from Mon Mothma with the Alliance fleet near Sullust.
And so I understand. But you must also bear in mind, Commander, that I have my duties to perform as well. Right now, those duties weighed heavily on Kuat to Kuat's shoulders. Everything depends upon me, he mused. The fate of Kuat Drive Yards itself, the corporation whose ships and armaments spanned the galaxy and formed the bulk of the Imperial Navy, the leadership of that enterprise was Kuat's hereditary legacy, just as it had been for his father and grandfather and for generations before him. And more, rising above Kuat Drive Yards was the mottled green sphere of the planet Kuat itself, an entire world and people dependent upon the fate of the corporation that funneled such a large share of the galaxy's wealth into their coffers. And I fought for this, thought Kuat of Kuat. I fought to keep this burden mine, rather than let others usurp it from me. At such times as this, when the weight of his responsibilities translated into bone-weary fatigue, Kuat began to question the wisdom of such a struggle. There had been plenty of others in the ruling families of the planet Kuat who had been eager to conspire against him and place themselves in this seat of power. As much as Kuat of Kuat might have been willing to let them have their chance, he had found himself unable to let go of his tight grasp upon the corporation. Because I know that they would never have been able to prevail against all our enemies. Kuat found it cruelly ironic that when death had removed the threat posed by Prince Shizor, another potential opponent should arise in the form of the Rebel Alliance.
There's no conflict between your duties and mine, said Commander Rojdenst. The Rebel Alliance has no designs upon Kuat Drive Yards. We would just as soon have the corporation remain in your hands. I wish I could believe that, Commander.
Kuat could hear his own voice turning cold. But stationing a squadron of armed rebel spacecraft is hardly the action of one who seeks friendship with Kuat Drive Yards. The Rebel Alliance would be satisfied with maintaining a neutral relationship with you. We seek no more than that. But when I say that your neutrality is something that we value, I don't mean just toward the Alliance, I mean toward the Empire. Kuat Drive Yards does business with the Empire, nothing more than that.
Kuat displayed a thin smile. A spark of anger showed in Rojden's eyes.
None of us in the Rebel Alliance have any doubt that you are fully willing to shift your allegiances to whichever force emerges victorious from the coming battle, and all the ones that shall follow. You have nothing other than Kuat Drive Yard's best interests at the center of your thoughts. But if events go as I believe they will at Endor, then the Empire's going to need replacements to its operational fleet as soon as possible, and taking delivery of what you've built for them here will be the fastest way of accomplishing that, which is the whole reason we're here. The Scavenger Squadron is going to be keeping an around-the-chronometer vigil on everything that happens here at Kuat Drive Yards, and I promise you, word comes from Endor about what's happened out there, and the Imperial Navy tries to take possession of the completed ships in your dock.
Rojdent shook his head.
It's not going to happen.
Indeed.
Kuat raised an eyebrow.
And what happens if the Rebel Alliance comes here and wants these ships? Am I to assume that Mon Mothma and the rest of the Alliance Command will be prepared to negotiate a fair and profitable deal for them?
A sneer twisted the corner of Rojdent's mouth.
They're fighting for their freedom and their lives.
And all you're concerned about is the amount of credits rolling into your coffers. Fine, you don't want to throw in your lot with the Rebel Alliance, that's up to you. But I think I'm clear in warning you what the Alliance's offer is likely to be for those ships in your construction docks. We'll worry about making compensation to Kuat Drive Yards after the war is over.
Well, now we know exactly where we stand with each other, don't we?
With his back turned toward the Rebel Alliance commander, Kuat picked up a micro-insertion logic probe from his lab bench.
If you'll excuse me, I've work to do.
He heard the commander's footsteps receding. In the space's restored silence, he regarded the thin, shining metal of the probe resting in the curve of his palm as though it were a sharp-edged weapon.
"We have no idea what I'm doing here," murmured Kuat.
A faint smile moved across his face.
"And they won't have much luck getting their hands on those ships."